The Tom Woods Show, episode 2316.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Hey folks, believing that the end of the world might be a bad thing that we should try to avoid is not a Russian talking point. But if we are going to avoid World War III, it's important for Americans to understand what's been left out of the CIA's narrative about Russia and Ukraine. Coming to the rescue here is my brand new free ebook, Your Facebook Friends Are Wrong About Ukraine. Pick it up at wrongaboutukraine.com. Hey everybody, Tom Woods here. I am so happy to have two great guests today, Hawk Jensen and Clifton Duncan, both of whom play very important roles in a forthcoming, as in just about to have its world premiere, docuseries, Follow the Science, Lockdowns Go Viral. We're going to be talking about that today. Hawk, you have been involved in filmmaking for quite some time. We did an episode together. I'm going to give you an opportunity actually to introduce yourself to the audience. And then Clifton Duncan, I hope people will remember. I remember it was episode 2001, not because I memorize all the episodes, but 2001 is not a hard number to remember. And it was in the middle of that episode that I realized that Clifton Duncan, who had been a Broadway actor, an extremely promising career, crazy talented, that I had actually seen him on Broadway multiple times in my favorite play. So I don't know how this all came together, but I'm really glad to have this association with the two of you guys. Hawk, just say a quick word about how you got to be involved in this project and what your background is.
Sure, absolutely. Well, thanks, Tom, for having us on. And yeah, I've been a filmmaker, a storyteller my entire career. I've never done anything else other than that. I went out to Hollywood way back in 1999 and went up through the trenches, started off working on sets, and eventually got into the world of being trained as a director. I was trained as a commercial narrative director initially, got into television writing, worked on some network television shows in the sort of staff writing capacity. And then at a certain point, decided to strike out on my own and start making films that I was in control of, because it's very difficult to be in control of your own projects in Hollywood. So I started making documentaries with my own company called Smock Media. And that led to me making films I would describe as dissident films about dissidents, about people who push back against authoritarian regimes. Very interesting characters, sort of Renaissance individuals who stand up in the face of authority. So I did a whole series called Witness Project, pushing that. And so I've just been honing my craft over these past 20 years. And when the lockdowns occurred and this new thing called COVID came along, SARS-CoV-2, that changed all of our lives forever, I decided to actually relocate from California back to my home state of New Hampshire. And during that journey, this was early 2021, during that journey, I got a phone call from some colleagues, some very talented filmmaking colleagues, saying, hey, something doesn't add up. Our logical, reasonable self says something doesn't add up, and our artistic, subjective self says something doesn't add up. And we feel we need to do something about it. We feel there's a story to be told here, and we'd like you to helm it. And I kind of looked at my career and looked at where I was and what was going on. I thought, you know, this is the project I was meant to create. And it was a very strong feeling. And we have basically since assembled a team of many, many dozens of filmmakers, had thousands of donors come along and grassroots support this. And we have just finished the film, the pilot episode, which is coming in an hour and 57 minutes, a 2-hour pilot episode, just finished two nights ago, and it just shipped to the theater for our premiere on April 19th down in Orlando, Florida. And Tom and Clifton, you guys will both be there. So it's been a heck of a journey, and I'm very, very excited to show this project to people, this film. It's very powerful. It's very good. It's the must-see retrospective on what happened and the resilience of the human spirit as to what COVID has done to all of us.
Well, I'm thrilled about it also, of course, and I was one of those thousands of donors, and I badgered people to help to contribute and help out. Now, Clifton, of course, I'm going to get to meet Clifton for the first time, even though I've seen him before. He has not seen me. That's the way the audience and stage presence thing works. But I'm very much looking forward to meeting you both on April 19th of this year. So coming right up, just a matter of days from now, the details on that for how you can attend the world premiere event, it won't cost you a cent. You get in for free. Can be found at tomwoods.com/documentary. Now, Clifton, I realize that this is no doubt a, to say the least, a sore subject, But for the sake of the audience, I would like if you could take a minute to explain how you got in the middle of this whole thing. I don't know that I would have had the stones to do what you did, to just put it mildly. But if you could just recount this ever so briefly, I would be grateful.
Sure. Well, I'll make sure to hold back my tears. I'm a Scorpio, so it's kind of difficult for me. But my name is Clifton Duncan. First of all, it's great to be back with you, Tom. But yes, I am Clifton Duncan. I am, or at least I was, a classically trained professional actor. I did my first play when I was 16. I dropped out of a French class and chased a girl into drama class, which is how most straight guys get into theater. And I went on to New York University's graduate acting program, got my MFA there, one of the top three conservatories. The runner-ups, I should say, are Juilliard and Yale. And over the next decade after I graduated, I built up a nice body of work, working at the best theaters across America, and then off Broadway, eventually on Broadway and on television. And things really began to take off for me in 2017, and then in 2020, the world kind of ground to a halt for obvious reasons, which I'm sure we'll get into. And I decided that I didn't want to go along with the program. And the entire industry decided that if you did not get the COVID vaccine, that you did not deserve to work or have a career. And I was very vocal about my opposition to these measures. And it sort of cost me everything. So now I don't have a manager or even a voiceover agent, which is hilarious. And now I joke about being a mediocre Twitter personality. I have a YouTube channel, and the people at Sound Mind Creative Group reached out to me. They heard my story, and they got me involved with Follow the Science, in which I play, I guess, the sort of narrator and everyman. And gosh, we shot it, what, a year ago, and now it's coming to fruition. And I can hear the relaxation in Hawk's voice. He's all done, and he's relieved now that it's done. And look forward to seeing it, meeting you, and having some drinks and maybe some embraces. Who knows? Let's see what happens.
Well, I'll tell you that I have five daughters, and two of them are actually coming with me to the premiere. And both of them have seen you, Clifton, on stage. They've both seen you. And I told them that you would be there. And one of them said, wow, how did you swing that? Because she thinks that it's because of her dad's vast influence that he's able to command celebrity like this. And so we're just going to let them stay in that state of ignorance where... I told them it was just happenstance, but they all thought that was rather an interesting novelty that they would have a chance to meet you. But so let's talk about this. So one interesting thing about this project, there have been numerous documentaries on various aspects of things already. There's been a pretty good one on Anthony Fauci that RFK Jr. worked on that was based on his book. There's been one on vaccine injuries. So there've been a number of them on different aspects of the question. But this one, though, one of the things that makes it stand out is it's not polemical. And that's not because we are wimps or we lack confidence in our beliefs, but rather that we've already reached all the hardcore people who are likely to come on board. Now we want to reach people, the average person, who wasn't quite sure what to think about all this, but notices that all respectable opinion seems to have supported it, but yet still has this uneasy feeling. We want to sort of give that person permission to have unapproved thoughts without feeling like he's going down some wild rabbit hole.
Well, absolutely. I mean, the project itself, I mean, I think you nailed it, Tom. There's a lot of people who just didn't know what to think. There was so much that happened so quickly, and there was this constant changeover of topic. I mean, one week to the next, it was, this is the fear that we're all supposed to think of for the moment, and then it would be dropped, and we'd move on to the next thing. I mean, it started with the idea of flattening the curve, lockdowns came along, and then reducing cases, getting to zero, contact tracing, masking, ventilators. There was this firestorm of just one thing after another, after another, and no one really knew what to think. And it would happen so quickly that we wanted to stop, go back, and look at it very clearly, very soberly, and without the sort of overwhelming sense of fear lingering in our psyches, just look at what occurred. And from an everyday perspective, from sort of the human interest perspective as to what happened to people on the streets and at their jobs, but also from the perspective of science itself, that what were the scientists thinking? Because there's the world of science, and then there's the public health policy leaders that sort of portray themselves as Science Inc., if you will. And that there really was a ongoing sort of struggle between the scientists who were trying to really tackle this, like everyday good sort of American scientists who were looking to create the Manhattan Project of like, what are we going to do about this in COVID versus this sort of on high top level speaking down to like, here's what we're going to do. And everyone's going to do the same thing coming from the top echelons of public health policy. And there was real strain and struggle there. So we brought in Jay Bhattacharya as our eminent public health policy expert to explain what his experience was. We sort of have a color commentary, sort of a 1-2 punch with another renowned scientist harking from originally from the Yale of Dr. David Katz, who is a chronic disease specialist. And the two of them really, they have a conversation in the course of the episode that really triangulates the hard science perspective of what happened in terms of the sort of intellectual side. But then we bring it into, and this is where Clifton comes into it, we bring in a science communicator, a fellow named Nick Hudson, a South African fellow who runs an organization called PANDA, pandata.org. And they're a group that really collected a lot of information about what was going on. And he's a very good science communicator. So what he does is he takes this very complex conversation that Jay and Dr. Katz are having and translates it in a way that Clifton, who is the everyman, he's the everyday, he's their host, but he's sort of, you know, we do have the hero's journey and he's the hero who's going along. Well, it was the ordinary world before COVID. COVID happens. We were sort of presented with this binary of like, either we have the lockdown like China or do nothing. And Nick comes along and is like, well, actually, the scientific method is a very complex thing, but it doesn't work like that. It doesn't just work with a binary to one thing or the other. There were other people thinking other ways. There were independent ways of going about what happened during COVID that were being completely ignored. And so we try and bring daylight to that through this series. And ultimately, bringing this all together, we do it through conversation where everyone felt they could no longer speak about it. Dialogue went throughout out the window. We try and bring back that conversation where people are talking to each other about it. And we reinforce that with a third point with we have a YouTuber named Sydney Watson. She's a journalist. And she has a conversation with a woman named Jen Reisman, who's a child psychologist. And she was very much a COVIDian, if you will. She was a mask enforcer. She was very much do what you're told. But she worked with children and could see how badly they were being affected. And she went through this process of over time and over study, realizing that perhaps what she's being told and told what to do didn't add up. And maybe it's time to change her mind. So we have this conversation between these two wonderful women about what it is to change their mind. These two scientists talking about what the science debate was internally. And then we have Clifton and Nick having this ongoing conversation of trying to make sense of it in a way that everyday people can understand. So we really are seeking dialogue to bring those fence sitters or those that general moderate center, center left, center right, people who didn't know what to think to a space where we can start talking about it again, because this is the conversation we should have had and didn't at the time.
And I think what's great about it and what it does, you mentioned conversations and scientists and science communicators. One of the things that I most enjoy about the project is that A, it's very accessible, but B, from a narrative perspective, I mean, you mentioned the hero's journey. It's sort of cleverly done where the framework of my journey, if you want to call it that, is through the application of the scientific method. We start out with a question or this hypothesis that lockdowns save lives. And the narrative journey is me exploring that question and again, with the back and forth with Nick, and then we come to perhaps a different conclusion, but it's very accessible. It's sort of meant for all ages. And I think you said it right, Tom. It's not polemical. It just explores these questions, and it has a bunch of really, really talented and clear communicators and scientists and experts and regular people, all kinds of people who are weighing in on this. And that's sort of the journey that it goes on. I think it's very cleverly done.
And I mean, let's be blunt, Clifton. I think you and I have very similar Twitter personas in that we can be rather biting and sarcastic and devastating and blunt and direct. And here we get the much more soothing version of Clifton Duncan.
Well, sure. I guess, yeah, can be a bit acerbic, definitely. Yeah, well, you know, I think that's sort of what's kind of cool about it is it kind of starts out in a lighthearted way. And, you know, I'm a Broadway veteran and sort of putting it on. But I think tonally, you have to draw the audience in. And I can't be the sort of irascible Twitter persona that I guess I'm renowned for. It's a very sort of inviting, let's explore all this together and figure it out. And I think, again, that's really well done on how it's put together by Hawk. And, you know, we had a bunch of great talented people that were working on it and figuring it all out. But hopefully people will be soothed, but not to the point of going to sleep. They'll be following along and maybe I can charm them and pull them in and carry them on the journey.
I think this whole approach shows very good judgment on the part of everybody involved. Because as I say, I think we've already gone the other route. So now let's see how many bees we can attract with honey kind of thing. Clifton, you were mentioning before we started recording that you're getting the sense that even if ever so slightly, we're starting to see the growth and maybe demands for accountability or people emerging now that the emergency has officially been declared over by Biden. People are looking around saying, what in heaven's name did I just approve of, or did I go along with, or how necessary was any of this? And this film comes along at a particularly opportune moment. But what makes you feel like you're seeing, like, what are the signs that maybe people are willing to reexamine this?
Well, for one, you see some of the reporting that's coming out now just within the past couple of months about natural immunity, the Cochrane review about masks and how they basically don't do anything. I think just the other day, there was a big study that came out of London that said that masks really didn't do, it was a hospital study, I believe, that masks didn't really stop the transmission of the Omicron variant. And anytime someone comes on Twitter and wants to either maintain restrictions or bring them back, I mean, they get horrifically ratioed. For those who don't know what a ratio is, it basically means that, you know, you put your thought out there and it gets more replies than it does likes. And oftentimes those replies are quite acid. So, you know, like you said before, the emergency declaration is ending, at least the national emergency is. And I also see people who are trying to sort of look forward and not back and trying to kind of weasel their way out of what's going on. I mean, there's a classic clip of Anthony Fauci just the other day where he said something along the lines of, you know, I maybe I was misled by the science. And I was like, well, I thought you were the science. So did you mislead yourself? These people are obviously twisting themselves in knots, trying to run away from the horrible things they did. I mean, the BBC did a report the other day about vaccine injuries, people being compensated. So these kinds of conversations, which were subterranean before and only relegated to the realm of quote unquote conspiracy theory, are now bubbling up to the surface. And it seems like people are taking stock of what's happened to children. They're noticing what's going on with the economy. They're noticing that these inoculations, shall we say, the cure may have been worse than the disease, so to speak. So I think people are kind of emerging from the fog and dealing with the consequences. And anyone now who suggests that maybe we should stick with it, I mean, unless they're in the entertainment industry, I mean, but even Hollywood has announced that they're going to, or they're allowing the COVID protocols to expire. The theater world has not made a correspondent announcement yet. I mean, they've clung to it forever. It's really embarrassing at this point. But I think in general, the public, they've been softened up and perhaps they might be ready to say, wait a minute, really what happened? Just the other day, a couple of weeks ago, we were in Washington, D.C. talking to some representatives. And, you know, I will say, I'll give the Republicans credit. They really seem to be more interested in finding accountability and making sure that none of these things happen again. I'll also say that the Democrats, it's shocking to me. I don't mean to make it partisan, but, you know, it inevitably became so. The Democrats, they seem not interested at all. And I mean, I guess you can't, it's no wonder because they did most of the damage. But yeah, you know, I think people are sort of emerging from the hysteria and maybe beginning to survey the surroundings a bit and take stock of what happened.
Yeah. And I'll jump in and say, like, I'm joyful about it, but it's been interesting to watch the politicians and those in charge feeling the need to save face and start rolling things back and start bringing out their sort of revisionist versions of things, because it means they know that they're in the wrong. And I feel that the dominoes are beginning to fall in terms of this propaganda matrix that was created that kind of took hold of everyone and gave this sort of excuse for this overreach by government into everyday Americans' lives. And one of the things about this project is we started filming this. I mean, we started filming this in March of 2021, I mean, a year into it. It's been 3 years ago since the lockdowns happened, and we've been working on this for 2 years. And part of the idea here was that we knew eventually, I mean, intuitively, everything that's happening right now, we knew would happen. So we're glad that we were right about that, for better or for worse. But we also knew that the mainstream media, or the legacy media, whatever we want to call it these days, we knew that eventually they would start to process of revisionist history. They would try and start sweeping it under the rug, memory hole it, put it in different lights. The new talking points coming out like, oh, well, if we knew then what we knew now, we totally would have done things differently, and claiming the science dictated what we had to do. And now like, oh, well, maybe we too, the scientists on high, were misled by the science. I mean, it's very opportunistic on their parts, I feel. And so we felt, I and the Sound Mind Creative Group, which is the anonymous film group that I was part of forming to give people the ability to make this without any retribution in terms of cancel culture. This online creative group and I looked at this and we're like, we want to document it real time. We want to have the retrospective of what occurred as it occurred. And so that we have this authenticity as the backbone of what we've made to appeal to people. I think people are really craving authenticity because there's been so much noble lies and propaganda and fear-mongering that we've been just sort of force-fed for 3 years now. People are just really just want to hear people who understand and have wisdom talk about what happened, what occurred from an authentic way. We also very fortunately, as we just kind of talked earlier, we do have a very strong charm patrol in our cast. The cast is incredibly charming across Clifton, Jay, David Katz, Nick Hudson, and Sidney Watson and Jen Reesman. These are all very charming, interesting people. And I say charm specifically in meaning these are people who are insightful, think about what they have to say and say it from their core. It lands, you hear it. You feel as if what these people are talking about is carefully considered and coming from their being, coming from their spirit. And I feel as if what we're trying to encapsulate is when COVID came along, when SARS-CoV-2 came along and justified these lockdowns, it put the American spirit into one of the greatest challenges it's ever faced. And we wanted to make sure we had a thread, a story, the hero's story, the hero's journey story that is an average of the American experience as to what occurred, how it was detrimental to the American spirit, and how do we preserve it? And so it emerges on the other end stronger than ever. And so I feel that we're going to see a renaissance of individuality and prosperity for all, because I do feel that the perpetrators of this can see the writing on the wall. Their views are out of favor. And I mean, I'm optimistic about this, but I do feel that it's good that they're rolling things back. And that my hope is our project, Follow the Science, when lockdowns went viral, is an opportunity for people like, oh yes, I remember that. I remember all of this. I had thoughts about this. I had feelings about this, because everyone experienced it. Everyone you ever met, everywhere you've ever been, also went through the lockdown. So with all that kind of rolled into one, I really hope to sort of reach the everyday American with what happened and how are we going to come through this as a people.
Hey folks, it's time to take just a minute for Woods to improve your life yet again. Have you lost count by now? For 3 years, I have been a happy customer of Happily Date Boxes. Every month, you get a box in the mail with a different theme for a date that you can enjoy in the comfort of your own home. And it gives you an opportunity to spend quality time with your significant other, even with your busy schedule. Just within the past week, my wife and I enjoyed the most recent of these, and this one had a morning theme, so it came with coffee. It came with the ingredients to make crepes, which we did together. As always, it comes with a curated custom date playlist, which we use on Spotify, a series of conversation starters, which we always enjoy, and then it included this time a game we played where we had to write down our answers to different questions about ourselves and then try to anticipate what the other person's answers were, which is hilarious, by the way. And then there was a bunch of other fun stuff, trivia, crossword puzzle, Mad Libs, other boxes we've done, crafts. We've done an exercise where they say you're on a desert island and here are 10 possible things that you might have in your possession. Rank them in order of how useful they would actually be to you. Very interesting and fun stuff. And if you are the one who comes up with the idea, your significant other is going to think you are absolutely amazing, and you do not have to say, Woods told me to do this. You just say, I just happen to be a really, really thoughtful person. Well, take 50% off your first date at tomwoods.com/date. That's 50% off your first date at tomwoods.com/date. Hawk, I wonder if you could give us a bird's eye overview of the whole project. So have you got a really, really long movie in effect that you're chopping into 2-hour segments, or does each episode have a theme of its own?
So what we've done is it's a 5-episode series, and what we're releasing, that what we're premiering, is the pilot episode. The pilot's actually turned into a proper feature-length documentary of sorts. It's a documentary-length pilot. It's 2 hours long. And very specifically, the pilot itself, called Lockdowns Go Viral, looks at basically January 2020 to October 2020. Starts with that initial onset where people think, well, what? Yeah, everyone's been living their lives. They started hearing the news. Oh, there's another one of these viruses. It's in the Far East. There might be a little bit of concern. You might hear a little bit on the news, but it's one of those things you just generally ignore and it goes away. And then it didn't go away. And it kept coming and it kept coming. And it was like, oh, well, it seems like something should maybe consider. And it really kind of brings through all those thresholds that we all kind of went through together where these new ideas were presented. I mean, oh, there's this thing called, you know, flattening the curve. Well, what's that? It's like, oh, well, we don't want to overrun the hospitals. Oh, well, how might we overrun the hospitals? It's like, well, we want to avoid a peak crisis of patients who would overrun the hospitals. So all we're going to do is like, hey, everyone, we're going to slow down. We're going to make a decision as a people and slow down for a little bit, not go to work, not leave our homes for 2 weeks and for the good of all. And it's like rolling up your sleeve and giving blood when there was a nearby emergency, that kind of, let's do this together. And it just started this ongoing kind of train wreck of an American nightmare of constant mission drift, constant change in messages, and this sort of push into here's something to fear, here's the next thing to fear, here's the next thing to fear. And so we walk through that, as I was saying earlier, we walk through all those discrete moments and we do it from the different perspectives. And we really drive to, at least at the end of the second act, we drive towards the story of Jay Bhattacharya and the Great Barrington Declaration, which was he and his colleagues, Satyendra Gupta and Martin Kulldorff from Oxford and Harvard, respectively, how they saw that they felt that this blanket lockdowns really were not the answer. In fact, all the science up until March 2020, all the science and all the known policies was that blanket lockdowns don't work. And what you need to do is this thing called focused protection. You look at the particular virus, who does the virus particularly affect? And once you realize who that is, then you take steps to protect those vulnerable groups. And in this case, it was the elderly and those with chronic morbidities, people with multiple diseases, people who were already susceptible to disease and they could succumb to the virus. And that is the sound science policy that was well-regarded, well-researched, and standard up until March 2020. And for some reason, it turned on a dime. And one day, all the world's leaders and all the world's public health policy leaders is like, what we have to do is lock down all of society. And good quality scientists like Dr. Bhattacharya looked at this and said, this doesn't make any sense. This doesn't make any sense. He, Jay at one point even says, he's like, yeah, I just thought I'd ring the alarm bells. Like, hey, you know, we came up with this Great Barrington Declaration to maybe raise the conversation that perhaps we went down the wrong route. Perhaps we can reconsider the policy and perhaps we can make an adjustment that is in better alignment with the science. And instead of the conversation shifting or the debate starting that he and his colleagues hoped to start, instead, it created a firestorm of propaganda attacks in which he and his colleagues were pushed aside as fringe scientists, were basically thrown into the whole camp of your everyday conspiracy theorists, whatever that means these days. And they saw that perhaps the science, the well-regarded on-high science that everyone thought like, oh, well, science, they do what's right. They know how to do it. May be far more corrupt than they had realized, and they themselves are part of it. And so it tracks that corruption. It really tracks that corruption, ultimately. And then the third act, we get into the actual harms. We look at the harms to the everyday people, and then we look at the actual data. We do a major data analysis with Nick Hudson. Clifton and Nick do this using scatter plots and statistical analysis. Look at the hard science, look at the data. We look at what it has to show, with very compelling graphics and animated sequences. And then we look at the everyday harms and sufferings of many people, restaurant workers, people who lost loved ones due to medical negligence in hospitals, and even worse. So we really try and run the gamut of what people experienced. And this is just episode one. And then we're going to get into further episodes as looking at the vaccine, looking at the origin, looking at masks, looking at the effects of children. Everything. We want to do a deep dive on each subject moving forward through the episodes.
Yeah, I just wanted to talk about the firestorm and the things that people experienced. You know, I consider him a friend now, but I got to meet Jay Bhattacharya, and you couldn't ask for someone with more warmth, more integrity, more intelligence. He's sort of a regular guy who works at Stanford, and he said, I thought I was going to spend my life writing papers, doing research, teaching students, and worshiping Jesus, you know, and being a husband and father. And he joked to me that the tide must be turning because the death threats have stopped. And when you see the kinds of things that people have said about Jay and how they've really tried to assassinate his character, it's really astounding. And that's why, I mean, I think that's one of the reasons that so many quote unquote conspiracy theories began to proliferate, just because people saw decent people like Jay, like Martin, like Sinatra being just viciously, viciously attacked by so-called experts, people who were saying, trust the experts. And yet here you have three experts from Ivy League universities. I mean, Martin was responsible for vaccine development and safety, if I have that correctly. But it didn't matter. It never seemed to matter. And when we were in DC, we were talking about our sort of parallel experiences, Jay and I, because we don't know what our future is supposed to be. I'm so disillusioned, I should say, with so many of my former colleagues, and Jay is so disillusioned with the entire establishment, scientific establishment. And we're both just like, what on earth are we going to do in the future? Because we obviously can't go back to where we were. Things have obviously changed so much. We've learned so much. We know too much now. So what can we do? Yeah, I just want to comment on that because to this day, I just can't believe that there was so much vitriol directed at this just really kindly, honest, straightforward, good dude. And I will say, you know, he's a hero because throughout all of this, he still has his same kind of warmth and radiant demeanor that he had before all of this, I presume. So he's quite a remarkable person. But yeah, the way that people really came down on him, I mean, Fauci, Francis Collins, it's really disgusting. And it really, so it's funny to see people talking about winning back the trust in public health. And I'm like, well, I don't know about that. That's going to be a really long road for you because we've seen decent people be completely maligned by either ideology or other motives. But it's really hard to unsee that once the Pandora box is opened.
And I might add about Jay that I said from the beginning that he's such a great person to have as a spokesman because he never loses his cool. He's always got that even, calm demeanor. He doesn't have the Twitter personality that you and I have, although it has been, in a way, kind of mischievously gratifying for me to watch Jay and Martin become spicier during this whole thing.
Jay is hilarious. I text him everyone. I'm like, dude, Jay, put down your phone. Get off of Twitter. He's like, I'm addicted. I know. I can't stop doing it. But he's putting out some bangers lately. He's got a little heat going on.
And that wasn't how he used to be. In fact, I remember each of them, I had them on separately on the show. And separately, I asked each of them very early on, tell me your frank appraisal of Anthony Fauci. And each of them basically said, well, you know, he's a great expert and virology and this, that, and the other thing. And I have a textbook on my shelf that's got him in it and all this and that. But we think he's bitten off more than he can chew on this, or he's obviously saying things that are beyond his area of expertise. I mean, he can't evaluate the costs and benefits of lockdowns. That's not part of his area, whatever. So they were trying to be a little bit balanced. If you asked them today what their opinion is, it would be a little bit sharper, I think.
Well, well deserved.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the scales have really fallen from their eyes, of course. And I think Fauci's being rightfully pilloried in terms of, I mean, he hides in his science babble. He often talks about, I mean, I've looked at so many Fauci quotes, but the way he's always like, I'll sit there all day and dismantle what everyone has to say in terms of being a critique of this. And yet I never see him actually do that. And the only things that they ever present him with are like, you know, they're, unfortunately, people were very scared. And, you know, I mean, literally every sort of people are like, oh, you're getting the microchip into your arm. I mean, those are the questions that the art-hitting meet the press style reporters would say, well, how do you feel about that? Like, well, that's just ridiculous. I mean, they always would go to the extremes. They wouldn't go to the highly informed scientists such as Jay Bhattacharya and say, well, what is his criticism? And how do you respond to that? That was never presented to Fauci to comment on. They always went to sort of these extreme measures of trying to say, like, oh, anyone who doubted it was somehow a lunatic. I mean, it was almost that bad. And this sort of, it was an, almost like an archaic, like our doctors and our scientists, at least they're not corrupt. We know that Hollywood's corrupt, politicians are corrupt. There was sort of a cynicism growing there, but at least our doctors and scientists, they hold to some higher moral regard or ethical regard for their profession, and we can trust them. And that was unfortunately not true. That was an unfortunately overplayed belief system that I think Fauci, amongst others, represents the downfall of that trust, of that regard for what was the perception of science, the perception of the medical field, that the corruption, it runs that deep. And that calling it out for what it is important for us to try and figure out, what did we get right? What did we get wrong? Where did we get lucky in what happened? And understanding that so we can do it better next time. And I think that's the kind of thing that we can do, that can, real scientists are capable of doing that. But characters like Fauci, I think, are well outside the bounds of doing that for real. I think they're all, at this point, I think they're all talk.
Well, I would say that I would never have described myself as naive on the eve of COVID. But I was. It turns out I was. There was an area of American society about which I was extremely naive, and that was the medical and scientific establishment. And now I see that they are subject to the same kind of pressures and venality and special interest pleading and financial incentives and everything that corrupts every other type of person exists in that system and corrupts those people too. They do not belong to some different class. They aren't a different species or a different race. They're exactly like the rest of us with the same moral foibles, the same failings, the same inclination toward wickedness. And I think they disgrace themselves during this crisis, both the regular medical establishment and certainly public health. I don't see how you can even utter the words public health anymore without a snicker. And I suspect that this project will help to further that. You know, I love Jay, and I understand that Jay Bhattacharya's career has been in public health, and he's gotten to know a lot of people in public health, and he's really concerned that we need to restore people's trust in public health. And I keep saying, Jay, I love you, and I understand why you're saying that, but I think one of the great silver linings of this is the destruction of that trust. You know, I'm glad that we don't have that trust anymore, that we don't have that childlike naivete. Hawk, let me ask you before I forget. Once this premiere is over, and again, I remind people, I really want to see you there. If you're anywhere near Central Florida, April 19th, you can get there for free, but do please register so we have a decent count at tomwoods.com/documentary. Please, please, please join us. It'll be a wonderful evening. Doesn't cost you a cent. But what I want to know is, once that's over, when can people, let's say, living in Zimbabwe, get a chance to see this thing? How are you planning to do distribution?
Sure. Well, the strategy all along was to make a pilot episode. It's kind of like an old world speculative, like if you build a house on spec. We wanted to raise the funds, make something of high enough quality to be worthy of a streamer like a Hulu or some of the other big names. And luckily, we own it 100%. Like, we wanted to make sure this story is told in a certain way. We have creative control. So we are literally going to be walking into and having the meetings with the various groups. We have a number of distributors we're talking to, but we're looking to go after a mainstream streamer. We feel that the tide is turning, that people are interested in this. I mean, I think that this presentation, this very apolitical group, that people have earned an opinion as to what occurred, because suffering did occur, but we're outside of the usual left-right political paradigm. We're really trying to look at it. I think that we're going to do very well with finding a solid top-notch distributor. We're basically literally finished, as I mentioned, we just finished it. So we're having our premiere to sort of kind of have the celebration with you, Tom, and you, Clifton, and so many of our donors and any of your audience members who are listening who can make it there. We'd love to have you. But we have a multi-pronged approach to swing for the fences, get us as far as we can with it. And the idea is, when you see this, you'll see what I mean about quality. It's almost like the wrong term is variety show, but there's so much going on. It was so ambitious. So we have all these storylines, all of these characters. We have visual effects. We have animations. We have a lot going on. And we have this incredible animated presentation of the data, which I'm really excited for both of you guys to see fully, that I think will really knock people's socks off. And in terms of trying to shake the ground a little bit, I'm curious to see what kind of debate and pushback we generate from those who would be inclined to do so from what we present in it. But yeah, I'll be walking it into various big offices and showing it and to see what they have to say about it. I'm very confident we're going to go far, and we'll probably do a release come June is the general plan there. But yeah, it's going to be an adventure, because obviously it's a controversial topic. We're an independent group pushing against the mainstream. So we'll see what kind of resistance we get, but we're going to hit as high as we can.
Well, I'm going to take the link tomwoods.com/documentary, and after the premiere is over, I'll redirect that to a page where people can contribute to the project. Now, there's already an option on the existing page to contribute to the project, but once there's no longer any reason to sign people up for the premiere, I'll redirect it to a page whose exclusive purpose is attracting more people to support this project. So if you've been listening to this conversation and you think to yourself, well, this seems like a worthwhile thing they're doing, and I believe in this, then I hope you'll join me. I'm not asking you to do anything that I haven't done myself. I made a fairly substantial contribution to this because I believe in this, and I've been talking about reporting on this for several years, and I don't ever want to see this happen again, and I want to contribute to anything that I think will stop that from happening, and I think this is as good a project as any for that purpose. So no matter what date you're listening to this episode on, you can go to tomwoods.com/documentary and help out this project for the ensuing episodes. I'll also mention once again that right now, up through April 19th, if you go to tomwoods.com/documentary, you can also register to attend and get the details and the location and the time and all those logistical details for the premiere itself, where all three of us who have been talking today will be present, and it's going to be just a great night, and you're going to be surrounded by like-minded people, and you'll just have a blast. And I have very deliberately chosen not to watch any portions of it, even the early version or anything like that. I had the opportunity, and I was told you can watch it at this time or that time. And I said, I want the first time that I see this thing all the way through to be with everybody together. So I'll be seeing it for the first time myself, and I'm really looking forward to it. So any final words from either of you gentlemen?
Well, I wanted to say, just bring it back to something that you said, Tom, which I thought was really important and insightful, which is that you don't really need to have a bunch of contrived kind of conspiracy theories. Myself as an actor, I'm asking myself, well, what is motivating these people? And it's exactly the kinds of things that you said. If you're a careerist, if you're somebody who is in a sort of bureaucratic system, you kind of want to keep your head down. You don't want to ruffle feathers. So corruption and these kinds of things, malfeasance, can, from your bosses, you kind of turn the other cheek or look the other way. At the center of this, it's a lot of human failing. And I was talking to Janine Unis, who's one of the few people, I poke fun at her. She's one of the few people I know whose life actually got better after all of this. And I asked her, I said, because she was talking about how she was at some firm in New York, but, her politics weren't left-wing enough, and so they wouldn't promote her. And it tracks with a lot of conversations I've been having with other artists who are being pushed out of these systems. And I just said to her, it seems like every institution that we know of, be it public health, be it government, various corporations or what have you, it's like it's happening all over the place. And all the good people that you want, for whatever reason, are sort of being pushed to the fringes or being character assassinated. And all the worst kind of people keep, or the most mediocre people keep rising to the top. And so I don't think it's great that people are saying, I'll never trust experts again. But I do think it is a good idea that we've seen now the mask, if you forgive the metaphor, has come off. And we've seen the corruption and the idiocy, frankly, in a lot of these institutions and a lot of these people. And as disheartening as it can be, I think the other side of that is that, well, we now have the opportunity to see what's going on. We really see what's going on, and we can build something better in the future. So like you, Tom, now that that naivete is gone, maybe we can build a brighter future from there.
Yeah, I have two things to say. First, I would like to say thank you to our donors. I mean, this project is 100% grassroots funded. We've raised over $480,000. Starting with you, Tom, you were our first donor and got this whole thing going. And we've had over 1,000 donations, and it's kept me busy and working hard. And I've actually been working 20-hour days for the last 20 days to get this thing done, because with a whole group of amazing filmmakers, all of which are being paid for the donors, there's no way we could have done this without the contributions of our supporters and the grassroots donors of this project. So, thank you, Tom, and thank you to everyone listening who donated. And we're still raising funds to finish this thing up. I look forward to people seeing it so they can see what we talk about in terms of cinema and what it is to create something of high production value, to be a cultural piece, a piece that will be germane and evergreen for 20 years from now. We want this to be an entry into the historical record that there were those who thought differently at the time. And so we're thrilled to have created that. And thank you once again to everyone. And then the other thing I wanted to say was, we talked about the sort of falling to ashes of this perception of like the trust in public health or different institutions such as science and the medical professions and just other aspects of culture that have seemed to be laying in ashes. And if we go with the metaphor of the phoenix, it's been interesting to see what's rising out of the dust. And what's really going to see us through this is the new crop of leadership, the new leaders that have emerged from this. And I would say Jay Bhattacharya is a very fine example. He was just a mild-mannered, brilliant scientist who was just going to do his science for the rest of his life on his very specific, esoteric little piece of the spectrum of something he wanted to study. And now he is a leader. He is a major leader of our time. And I think he's going to go on to do great things, as are with his colleagues. And just, it's been interesting to watch Clifton become a major voice in this, and my other colleagues and the other voices within this. People have really risen to the occasion, because we can't sit back and expect someone else is coming along and save us. It's become this era of the individual realizing that the only way to help yourself is to do it yourself, and seeing people rise up to do it and lead it and be part of it has been really inspirational. I'm thrilled to be part of it. I'm happy to be leading the little piece that I'm leading, and I look forward to releasing this feature-length documentary pilot episode docuseries, Follow the Science, Lockdowns Go Viral, so that everyone can see what I've been talking about these last few years. And I hope to really improve the scientific literacy, cultural literacy, and general media literacy that everyone needs so that they can get back to having the conversations and the dialogue so our families and communities can get along together again, because it's just, we've been so separated. And I feel that conversations and good leadership is going to lead to a better American culture and an American spirit. So I'm thankful for you guys being part of it and everyone who's been working so hard on it, and to all of our supporters for making it happen. I think that's going to help lead us through this.
Amen.
Well, my thanks to you, Hawk Jensen, also to Clifton Duncan. Make sure and check out the Clifton Duncan podcast. It is an outstanding podcast. You will not be sorry you listened to it, as you perhaps sometimes are when you listen to the Tom Woods Show. Not so when you listen to Clifton Duncan. But thanks to both of them for their work on this project and for all the good things that they've been doing. And my thanks to you, ladies and gentlemen. So remember, tomwoods.com/documentary, and I hope to see a good many of you in Orlando.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.